talking to my people, yeah.
Your life running like a rare disease. Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names. But because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timephoneawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope all is well with you today. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, have to do, and must do, and could, and should do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, sometimes I talk so fast, I just ramble. But if it wasn't, you had to do it anyways. And so I'm glad that you did. I'm quite sure those who were responsible and those who you affected were glad you did as well. So today, of course, is the birth date of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And this is his actual birth date, the 15th. And the commemoration day is today, which is the third Monday of January for Dr. King's birthday. And they celebrate his life because that's what this country does. This country will celebrate your life after you've passed because they're going to vilify you and demean it and castigate you while you're living, saying that you were, as J. Edgar Hoover said, Dr. Martin Luther King was the most dangerous Negro on the planet. You know, that's what he said. The most dangerous Negro on the planet. And he was deemed a troublemaker. And the irony is that he did this with the strict adherence to nonviolence. Even when they were doing things to you that you know in your right mind, out of your very human survival, that you would fight back. But he and all the brothers and sisters that worked with him and marched with him and demonstrated or sit in or whatever tried to follow that same practice. Now, of course, he took it from Gandhi, and Gandhi, I'll continue to say this, I'm sorry, but Dr. King didn't know the history of Gandhi, particularly in South Africa, and the evil things that he said and how he felt about African people. But being Indian, that's not surprising. So there's a statue of Gandhi at the King Center. You know, I think it should be gone myself. I think they should take it away. But Africa. It's there because they believe that Gandhi, and just like with Dr. King, well, let's be real. Gandhi did it because they could not fight the British militarily. They didn't have the weaponry that the British had. So they did their best to shame the British in the world's eye because of what it was doing to people who were defenseless, who were demonstrating, who were protesting. And the same here in this country. And all of the things that Dr. King did and said, he was hated while he was living. And then after his death, just like El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz, hated, vilified, demonized. But then once you're dead, then you put you on a stamp. I'm quite sure. I would put big money on. I'm quite sure El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz could give less than a rat's boop that he was put on a stamp. In fact, he would argue sorely against it, just like he would argue sorely against having a national holiday for him in this country after what has gone on and continues to go on. I would venture to say that Dr. King would be the same way. I'm serious. Talking with a brother, Ernie G., this jockey for WNOV Radio, his birthday is coming up, and he reminded me of when we were petitioning to make Dr. King's birthday a national holiday. And the work I just helped getting petitions signed, help all, you know, and believing that at that time, it was the early 80s, very early 80s, 79, 80, 81, in that area, Ronald Wilson Reagan was the one that signed the order and the law making Dr. King's birthday a national holiday. Okay, I think a couple of states reject Arizona. I remember definitely being one of them. I think there's a state in the Northeast, I believe, maybe another, I don't know. But Arizona was definitely one of them because they took the Super Bowl away from them. Excuse me. And the people in Arizona were quite mad because of the kind of money that the state lost. The state of Arizona, the governor of Arizona lost the state because of that. But whether any state recognized Dr. King's birthday as a national holiday, it comes back to, once again, symbolism without substance. Even today, the pushing and promoting of today is the greatest thing you can do is do something for somebody. And so the big push is to volunteer your efforts and time to do something in the community. Volunteer to help clean up something, help elder, whatever. And I recognize doing something for others, how important that is. Because that's my life as well. In fact, one thing that always comes bringing a tear to my eyes was before my mother passed. You know, I was coming to visit her. And as I was entering her room, she said, "Here's my son who tries to help everybody." Because I always tried to be a servant in the organizations I've been involved in. Even when I was in a leadership position, I never thought of myself as I'm it. No, what can we do to work together to help others? What can we do? So that was Dr. King, and he was the moral conscience of this country. And he was adamant about the country living up to what it put down on paper. And has he further into his activism, realized that this country was about lip service. As he said, this country was about the three evils: racism, excessive materialism, and militarism. He was right then, 50 years ago, and he's right today. April 4th, 1968 was the day he was assassinated. And just like other events of that kind of magnitude of an individual or a situation that is very prominent or very horrific, people remember where they were, what they were doing when they heard of that incident or that situation. I remember it clearly. I didn't know that King had been killed until I came home. I was, you know, in high school. And playing ball. Didn't hear about it until I got home and my mother told me, and she was crying. And then, of course, the country went up in flames. Major cities across this country went up in flames. Because he was adamant about making sure that this country lived up to what it said on paper. And I've maintained that the Constitution, the declarations, amendments, the Emancipation Proclamation, all of those aren't worth the paper that they're printed on. It's all hypocrisy. This is not democracy. This is hypocrisy. They're a bunch of hypocrites. And it's no more hypocritical than today. It was no more hypocritical to see all those Negroes the other day standing behind Trump as he was signing, which, you know, to me it was ridiculous because the way it read in the Facebook, that he was signing that this day would be. I guess that was a misprint because I guess what he was doing was just, once again, from the presidency of the United States, recognizing this holiday that was already a part of the national, you know, so, but even at that, because, I mean, you know, let's be real. What Trump said, you got to believe that Trump might have thought that he did this. Donald Trump might have thought that he made Dr. King's birthday on this day a national holiday. After all, he did say, Frederick Douglass, he's really doing a lot of good things. That Frederick Douglass, man, he's a go-getter. So I don't put anything past Trump for what he does or what he says. And of course he said what he said in the Oval Office. It sickened me to hear the senator from this state, Purdue. He didn't say it. This and he didn't say it. I always say, this is the quote, some attributed to Malik Shabazz, some attributed to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But I love it because it's true. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history. Look at history. That's why I'm such a serious proponent and advocate of looking at history from our perspective, from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective, and being unapologetically African in doing it and interpreting it. Look at the history. That's why, to me, I'm not surprised at anything. I'm always disappointed, but hey, I'm not surprised at all. You can join this conversation today. We're talking about the life of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King on his birthday, on his commemorative Monday that we celebrate Dr. King with all kinds of things happening. I know that Ebenezer Baptist Church on Auburn Avenue will be packed. There'll be tons of people visiting the King Center for Nonviolent Social Change and all the other places around this city, particularly because he was born here. And, of course, in other cities. I know Milwaukee, we've always had some good King celebrations. And there's one that's going to be held at the Wisconsin Black Historical Society on 27th and Center. The keynote address will be my good friend, Brother Dr. Greg Kamathi Carr, the chair of Africana Studies at the Howard University and a contributor, a panelist, before they took it off the air, Roland Martin off the air, News One Now on TV One. Still waiting for a lot of stuff to come out about that before I can tell you, our listeners, what went down, why they took Roland Martin off. So we're going to talk about Dr. King. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. Tonight, we're supposed to have, and I believe we have, I'm going to check with Brother Elliot, By Black 365. They're going to have a program here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays at 8 o'clock. So check them out. I believe it is also, too, they're going to be simulcasting with Facebook, I believe, as well as a audio. So audio and a visual. I'm going to do that, too. Hopefully next month I'm going to do that. Working with my good friend, Brother Kwaku, and thank him for all his assistance and all that he helps us do with Motherland Media here on Time for an Awakening Media, as well as working with Black Talk Radio Network. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister PLC from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Wednesdays. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in a Spirit of Ujamaa, or Cooperative Economics, or like we like to say, family-centered economics, of pulling our monies together. We are about to open, brothers and sisters, been doing work there, and painting. Once again, thanking Brother Kwaku for his assistance, helping to get the Cafe ULU up and running. The target date is the 29th of this month, with the grand opening coming, I think it's the 5th of February, but the 29th is Monday. Two Mondays from now, we plan to open up Cafe ULU as a cooperative that people who put money into the cooperative, and hopefully this will be the example necessary and needed where more brothers and sisters will begin to participate so we can open up more cafes or any other thing else that we need to do, because we, brothers and sisters, see how serious it is and how important it is that we do something for and with each other and helping to provide goods and services as well as jobs for our people. Us Lifting Us. That's every Thursday from 9 p.m. to 11. On Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. And then on Saturdays, it's SST. That's Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. We definitely hope to get Dr. Rogers. He had a good program on Blog Talk Radio this past Saturday. But we need to get him right here, back here with Motherland Media on Time for an Awakening and Black Talk Radio Network. He provides a lot of good information, good presenters and so forth, good panelists. And so he needs to be on here with us. And on Sunday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it is Revive with Sister POC. Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening. 7 p.m. on Sundays with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. Time for an Awakening. You can join this conversation in dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, his life, his legacy, and what it really means. I know that many of our people believe what we've been told. And I'm hoping that many of us who have an understanding and a consciousness or awareness know that we can never believe anything we've been told by this system. I know I can't, and I don't. You know, I don't believe anything that they say. You know, in fact, they say if that's brown, I'll say it's red. I detest the system. I detest the government. Somebody told me, well, you should move then. Eventually, I more than likely will. But at this moment in time, I'm trying my best to awaken our people. I'm trying my best to put something on the minds of African people to elevate and raise their consciousness. We are at war for the minds of our people. And I understand when Dr. King was really doing his thing, he didn't understand that we were at war for the minds of our people. He thought that he could appeal to Caucasians, because there was a number of Caucasians in the movement, and there were some Caucasians who were helping to finance it. So he thought that he could appeal to them. And in that appeal, they would treat us differently. They would begin to understand the plight of us and our suffering and respect our humanity. And then, more importantly, change the behavior and allow us, if we had the abilities and so forth, to move within the society.
This call is being recorded.
Unchallenged. He thought that. The reality is, of course, that's not the case. We have a caller. Good morning, caller 267.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshi. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine, Brother Ralph. How are you?
All right, Brother Oshi. I'm just calling to get your perspective on things. I sort of know your perspective, but I want to make them very clear. I just want to get it clear. I know you heard the conversation. Did you hear the show last night when the brother was on there talking about Ghana?
Yes, I did.
Did you hear one of the callers seem very upset that somebody would even mention such a thing? Did you hear that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah.
Number two. Now, this is the thing that I'm trying to figure out, brother. Like, if you have a poisonous snake, right, you've been warned that this is a poisonous snake.
Yes, you're
don't
right.
touch it.
That's right.
But then you have a close friend that says nothing wrong with that poisonous snake. I'm going to befriend him and then get bit. Who are you more upset at, Brother Oshi? That poisonous snake or the person that ignored all warnings, seen for years this thing has been killing people, but yet go and befriend it and pick it up?
I have to admit, after being forewarned consistently and continuously, if you go do it, that's your beep. That's your ass. because you knew it was a snake, but yet and still you thought that somehow you
could appeal to the snake's gentle nature and be able to handle it and hold whatever. But the next thing you know, it bites you. And then it turns around and looks at you and says, well, you knew I was a snake.
Yep. Right. Now, you know, I saw the video of all these, and I know what you're going to say, because I hear you every time, and I have a tendency to disagree with you on this one, but you said you cannot blame the victims of the poisonous snake, because the poisonous snake conditioned them to think a certain way. But I looked at the thing on the when the president, I'm going to call him the president because that's what his title is. You know, some people can call him whatever they want to. I'm going to call him the president because that's what he is. And he was signing something for Martin Luther King. And he had a whole bunch of us around him that I know for a fact know better, Brother Oshie. But they were up there smiling and grinning and, you know.
This was
who can and, we can we blame the poisonous snake still, Brother Oshie?
And this was the next day after what he had said about,
yes,
you know, and they're all there, and Ben Carson is there, and what's that? Whatever, Reverend Scott, the preacher, the pastor of that church in Ohio, who said that he had talked to gang members in Chicago. You know, all of them were there. Paris Denard, who has been being dissed and dusted on various talk shows by other pundits because he's a constant apologist for Donald Trump, you know. So, yes, they were there.
And they were smiling. They was befriending the poisonous snake. They loved them. I mean, that's actually, that's what their actions showed. I mean, from the smiles on their faces. So I'm saying, who needs more help? Who needs more focus? The poisonous snake or the victim that continues to pick it up, get bit over and over and over again, and denies that this thing is dangerous?
Well, see, there's enough, as a cliche goes, enough blame to go around. But you understand, see, reason why I don't blame us is because of because of what has happened to us mentally. What we constantly go through on a day-to-day basis, we're bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of our inability or inferiority. And if you're consistently beaten with that, then eventually you succumb. I don't give a damn how strong you are. In fact, there's a saying, it's hard to live in a whole house and not turn a trick. If you don't have an alternative, you're going to pull your money out. And that's what this is. And the fact that we are entrapped in that with our inability to listen to authentic African-centered leadership who has been telling us, you know, come out of that. Let's come together. Let's pull our resources. Let's do for ourselves. Come out of that. But yet we believe somehow that what this Caucasian has said to us previously and how and things that he's done, that we can overcome that through our love, through our petitioning, through our willingness to sacrifice our humanity and our very lives so this Caucasian can accept us and then we can be a part of the society we can move within a society freely as any Caucasian can. That's a pathological denial of reality and history. And that's what sickens me about us, but I put the blame where it squarely belongs, on the perpetrators of these dastardly deeds.
Right. No, you know? And believe me, I understand. We just need to tell the people. And this is my thing. We just need to inform the people, like Elijah Muhammad did in the 60s, what the nature of this beast is. Then you choose what you want to do. So once you have a choice,
right,
you can no longer Right. You can no longer blame, you know, you can no longer blame the poisonous snake because it's going to lay there just waiting to kill you.
Yeah.
But I done warned you over and over and over again. You still ain't listening. So the thing about it, that's what I like about the brother you had on that one day, Dr. Rogers, because he seems like he attacks the mind of the victim. We got to attack the mind of the victim. We can no longer try to just, I mean, we could call that poisonous snake the devil. We could call it evil. We could call it, but it's still going to be a poisonous snake. We got to leave it there.
Yes.
Let's start dealing with the victims of this stuff, letting them know how foolish they are, and give them some, and I understand what you mean being bombarded, because if you look at this, the average black talk shows, black radio shows, all of them, every last one of them is bombarding our poor folks with BS.
Yeah.
And, you know, the one that really gets me, and the black radio hosts, they don't like me when I call in. That's why I don't no longer call those other shows, because they don't like it when I call in. I said, no, first thing first, you're lying to our people when you said our people died for the right to vote. They were murdered and beaten because they tried to get some justice out of a rotten system. Why don't you tell them the truth?
Exactly.
They weren't stupid to pull a lever and die just to pull a lever for some racist clown like Eisenhower and the rest of them, Roosevelt. They weren't that stupid, but they wanted justice, and they were beaten and killed. So they just didn't lie down and die. Like, you know, so I mean, there's so much that we have to, I think we as a people, we have to change our perspective. We have to stop lowering our standards. Our standards are so low. Some of our people are still worshiping that clown that just left office, Barack Obama. So I'm just saying, man.
Oh, big time. They're worshiping him big. They're worshiping him big time, especially because of Trump. Oh, man. The love for Obama and Michelle. I mean, there's things that you see on Facebook and in social media with the glorification and deification of Barack Obama. You know?
Man, I heard a couple of fools saying we should give him a holiday, but thank goodness there was somebody in there. In that studio that said, how can you get this man a holiday just because he dropped bombs on live people?
Oh.
He authorized dropping bombs on live people. How can you give him a holiday?
And look what he did. He was assistant in the murder of Muammar Gaddafi. The blood of Muammar Gaddafi is on his hands as well as Hillary Clinton and the West. And what
and
he wanted to do.
Still going on there.
Yeah.
They knew, and if you listen to Cynthia McKinney, she said they knew it because her and the brother, I think Reverend Fauntleroy, they were both there. They had to be flown out of there. So they knew about that situation, I believe. So, and that woman was a congresswoman.
Yeah.
So she knows exactly how they operate, what they know and what they don't know. They knew about that slavery, but they were black Africans. Who cares?
Yeah.
This was their idol, Barack Obama, and their other idol, Hillary Clinton. We can't forget her either because they love her. There's some of them still crying about the Electoral College and how she didn't get in. So, man, I tell you, Brother Oshie, I think we have a lot of work to do our minds. It starts with me. You know, I can get on the radio and call that person all sorts of names I want to, but I graduated from kindergarten a long time ago. I no longer have to call nobody out their name. Only thing I got to do is be the best person I can be and try to deal with our people and let them know there's a problem here, and if we continue in this problem, it will always exist.
That's right.
It will always exist. So, you know, brother, I just called up. I didn't hear your phone ringing. So I said, let me call up. Let me stir up the pot a little bit.
All right.
And maybe somebody else that's listening got an answer for us, man.
I hope so.
But I don't think there's no freedom in calling a poisonous snake a poisonous snake. You know, we just got to let them know this thing will kill you. do not befriend it. Let's do some things on our own. Let's build up that sovereignty that we know we need. Let's build up our standards. Let's get our pride back.
Yes.
Get that, you know what I mean? Yes. It's so much stuff that bothers me, man. I'm all bottled up this morning because I just see our condition and it bothers me, man.
Yeah.
It bothers me, brother.
Hey, so, brother, I deal with this 24/7, 365. Since I got out of off the fire department and started to do more community work, because I was doing a lot of stuff even during that time, but even more so, and now I'm just consumed with the hope and the prayer of African people coming into their right minds. I push and promote independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people on the continent and throughout the diaspora. That is what I'm about. And that to me is the only discussion that we need to have. And the fact, and the fact that really there should be no other discussion as, except to how can we achieve this. We definitely should not have any argument with ourselves about whether or not we should be that. That is ludicrous to argue whether or not we should be self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. That's crazy. Especially
or going back to Ghana. Or going back to Ghana. Yeah. That should not irritate a person. You know what I mean? If we want to go back to Ghana, and which I heard the cost of living is very cheap. I'm thinking about retiring and leaving this place. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to get my wife on board with it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, that's what I'm looking at. I look at family, but I have a wife because she helps me with my decisions. But the thing about it, that should not upset anybody, Brother Hoshi.
Right.
That a person wants to go back to Africa. And that shows me a lot about the stuff that we have to work on. Why would that upset anybody that you want to return back to your homeland? I don't understand it, brother.
Because we've been made to feel ashamed and embarrassed, and we hate Africa, and we hate being African. We hate it. I hear you, my brother. Thanks
a lot,
brother, man.
Oshie. I'm gonna continue listening.
All right, please do, man. If anything else comes up, give me a call. Right on,
all
brother.
Right, brother.
Peace to you.
Peace.
I want to play for the rest of this hour, and we'll, after it's over, be at the top of the hour, a little bit after, and then we'll go back into some another announcement. I'm going to play a piece from the Great Griot. I love that sister. And, of course, you can check out the Great Griot on YouTube and become a member of it. But this is a piece that she did on Dr. King.
This is February, and I'd like to welcome you to Black History Month, better known to mainstream as Dr. Martin Luther King Month. Everything Dr. Martin Luther King. School curriculums, Dr. King. News reports, TV shows, Dr. King. Luncheons, dinners, events, Dr. King. So let's not change tradition now. Let's learn about Dr. King. The parts of Dr. King's life, and especially his death, that they'll never teach you.
Good evening. Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Police have issued an all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene. Officers also reportedly chased and fired on a radio-equipped car containing two white men. Dr. King was standing on the balcony of a second-floor hotel room tonight when, according to a companion, a shot was fired from across the street. In the friend's words, the bullet exploded in his face.
In 1999, new evidence surfaced painting a totally different picture than the one we were initially sold pertaining to the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. The old image was of a white racist man by the name of James Earl Ray, who took a rifle and from the bathroom window of a rooming house across the street from the Lorraine Hotel on a solo mission, fired a shot on April 4th, 1968, killing Dr. King.
The police here in Memphis immediately issued a bulletin for a young white man dressed in dark clothes who dashed out of that building across the street. He dropped a Browning automatic rifle, which was fitted with a scope, on the sidewalk, and then he fled.
With mounds of evidence and testimonies, William Peppers, an attorney, will represent the King family in the 1999 wrongful death civil action suit of King versus Lord Jowers and co-conspirators, which exposed that James Earl Ray was not the culprit, and it definitely was not a solo mission. Lloyd Jowers, the owner of Jim's Bar and Grill, located across from the Lorraine Hotel, stepped forward, telling his story to Sam Donaldson on ABC Primetime. According to the transcript of that interview, a mafia-connected produce dealer named Frank Liberto approached him to assist in the murder plot of King. Liberto had a carrier deliver $100,000 to Jowers restaurant with instructions to hold the money. And on the day of the murder, a man by the name Raul, the same man that helped frame James Earl Ray, showed up with a rifle in a box. The case would show that these frontmen were only an accomplice to a larger conspiracy, one involving the U.S. government.
There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the fifth victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality.
We've had in our area here outside agitation groups of all levels. We've had Martin Luther King, the mayor of this city,
the police commissioner of this city, and everybody in the white power structure of this city must take a responsibility for everything that Jim Clark does in this city.
As early as the 1950s, Dr. King's activities and organizations was targeted by COINTELPRO. His every move was under constant federal surveillance to neutralize King as an effective leader. And of course, to get even closer to King, they paid and supplied informants to infiltrate King's camp. Jowers claimed the meetings to assassinate King took place at Jim's Grill, which included undercover Memphis police Merrill McCulloch, Memphis police Lieutenant Earl Clark, a third police officer, and two men Jowers thought to be federal agents. Leading up to the plot to completely silence King, the goal was to make him totally vulnerable on his return trip to Memphis by removing any security detail who could be a witness and sympathetic to him. April 3rd, two black firefighters, Floyd Newson and Norval Wallace, who were working at fire station number 2 across the street from the Lorraine Motel, were each transferred to different fire stations. Newson, an activist himself, was at the last speech that King would give before receiving the call to change his location. Jerry Williams, a black detective for Memphis Police, typically tasked with securing an all-black security team to accompany King when in Memphis, this time wasn't assigned to form that team. The TAC-10 police escort team, who normally provide Memphis police cars that accompany King, was pulled back. Ed Reddit, a black police officer, was removed from his surveillance post and sent home against his will 1 hour prior to King's assassination. The Invaders, a group similar to the Black Panthers, who were also staying at the Lorraine Hotel, was helping King to organize. They were ordered to leave around 5:30 p.m. after someone telling the Lorraine staff that the SCLC would not pay for their rooms for the night. Reluctantly, they departed around 5:50 p.m. With all possible obstacles out of the way, Dr. Martin Luther King now stood alone, prepped for the assassination. On April 4th, by 6:01 p.m., military intelligence set up photographers on the roof of the fire station with clear view to Dr. King's balcony. in the 20th Special Forces Group, the Green Beret, had an 8-man sniper team at the assassination location. Lloyd Jowers stated after the shot was fired, he received a smoking rifle at the rear of the door from Lieutenant Earl Clark. He broke it down, wrapped it up, and was disposed of by taxicab driver James McGraw, a longtime friend. And to complete the plot, it was imperative for the U.S. government to cover up their involvement. And they did. Several witnesses identified activity coming from the bushes behind Jim's grill, and not one was questioned. Although one cab driver, Buddy Butlers, did get an opportunity to report what he saw. Buddy Butler was loading a customer's luggage in his car when the shot rang and reported that he saw a man running from the scene right after the shot, going south on Mulberry Street and jumping into a police car. Butler immediately called dispatch and reported it. Butler was interviewed at the Yellow Cab Company later that evening by police. Louis Ward would later find out that Buddy Butler's body was thrown out of a speeding car on Route 55 in Memphis. And 7 a.m., April 5th, the next morning, Maynard Stiles, a senior official at the Memphis Sanitation Department, received a call from Memphis Police Department Inspector Sam Evans, requesting to clear the bushes and debris from the lot adjacent the hotel. The crime scene was sanitized, wiped clean. So the alibi of James Earl Ray shooting Dr. King from a bathroom window would appear more believable. After 70 testimonies and mounds of evidence, 12 jurors, 6 white, 6 black, deliberated for 1 hour before revealing the verdict. King versus Lloyd Jowers and co-conspirators, including J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, Richard Helms and the CIA, the U.S. military, the local Memphis police, and organized crime figures from New Orleans and Memphis. And in what should have been the court case of the century, was silent. Only one local newsman covered the trial. According to the trial, the same government that honors King was found guilty in conspiring to kill him. But what we must understand is why. The persona that they create of King.
I have a dream. I have a dream. I have a dream. I still have a dream.
Is not the man that they silenced, the man that pushed farther than civil rights. Years after his dream, Dr. King began to focus on three issues: racism, war, poverty.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counters. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms, Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
His second issue, war.
Nothing more clearly demonstrates our nation's abuse of military power than our tragic adventure in Vietnam.
Dr. King, when you speak out against this war, do you speak as a Negro opponent of the war? Is there something especially anti-Negro or racist about the war that impels you to speak out?
I cannot overlook the fact that I am a Negro, and that this war is doing a great deal to destroy the lives of thousands and thousands of my brothers and sisters. We are dying physically in disproportionate numbers in Vietnam, some 22 and 4/10% of the deaths, even though we are only about 11% of the population.
It has frustrated our development of home at home, telling our own underprivileged citizens that we place insatiable military demands above their most critical needs. It has greatly contributed to the forces of reaction in America and strengthened the military-industrial complex. And it has practically destroyed Vietnam. Many of our senators and congressmen vote joyously to appropriate billions of dollars for the war in Vietnam. And many of these same senators and congressmen vote loudly against a fair housing bill to make it possible for a Negro veteran of Vietnam to purchase a decent home. We arm Negro soldiers to kill on foreign battlefields, but offer little protection for their relatives from beatings and killings in our own South. We are willing to make the Negro 100% of a citizen in warfare, but reduce him to 50% of a citizen on American soil.
And last, with the Poor People's Campaign, was his stance on poverty.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. The real question is whether we have the will.
And in the spring of 1968, Dr. King had plans to bring attention to these issues by bringing hundreds of thousands of poor people to an encampment in Washington, D.C., which caused a panic to the U.S. government. Their plan was to camp out until America pulled out of the Vietnam War and to reinvest that never-ending flow of money made available for war to dominate another country back into its citizens to help fight poverty in this nation. And although King preached a nonviolent message, they were terrified that demonstrators' anger level would increase, and they feared that a more radical group would take over and spark a revolution that they didn't have the troops to put down. The truth is, there was a reason for Dr. King's assassination, and it wasn't his stance on nonviolence and social integration. It is time for us to weed through the intentional deceptions about Dr. King and study him for ourselves. Because what he died fighting is not only facing us today, but it has magnified. So I ask you, will you celebrate his legacy with this symbolic ceremony? Or will you have the audacity to continue his fight? Our fight, which is even more necessary today.
The first person to comment on this video, stating what you appreciate about Dr. Martin Luther King.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I love the great Griot. Love that sister. And as you can see, that the assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was carried out by this government, like the assassination of El Hajj Malik El Shabazz was carried out by this government. They can put stooges, they can put black faces in a high place, they can put a person right where they feel they need to be. There's plenty of sellouts, even to this day. Plenty of sellouts that will be willing to do the bidding of this evil, corrupt system and to help maintain and sustain the privilege that Caucasians have created for themselves. There's plenty. Got a caller? I want to go ahead and take the caller. He's been holding for a while. 602, good afternoon, caller.
Yes. Oh, you.
Brother Marcus, how are you, sir? How are you, Brother Marcus?
I'm doing great, brother. I'm doing great. You know, as I listen to Martin Luther King, you know, I guess he was trying to solve the problem, you know, in the American context, trying to solve our problem in the American context. But, you know, as I said, integration, you know, is not going to work either, because they know that even if black folks integrate into the society, that is genetic annihilation for them, because our germplasm is more dominant than them. So that would wipe them out too. You see, so integration is not the solution for black people. The only solution is Pan-African.
Pan-Africanism. That's, you know, right. You are right.
And the sooner we realize that as a people, you know, then we can start to move into that direction. You know, I really believe that the European is genetically exposed to violence. I don't think he has the ability to be a non-violent person. And, you know, I think living in that role, and when you study from the dark, you know, look at what they did to Asia. World War I, World War II.
Brother Marcus, you're breaking up on me, dear brother. You're breaking up.
You hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead now.
Yes, I said World War I, World War II, the Dark Ages. It was Europeans doing it to each other. You know, so these people here, there is no hope for them. I'm telling you. When I study our history, and from way back in Egypt, our people realize these people here, you know, they say when they see them, they say they are bad omens. You know, that's from Egypt. Our people realize it. And these people ain't changed. So, they are a menace to this planet. You know, and look what they're doing now to the whole planet. To destroy the creation. You know, so these people here, they have no redeemable character, and black people trying to civilize them are trying to, you know, that's futile, you know, I really don't know, you know. So the faster we begin to move towards nationalism and our solve our own problem, you know, then we'll be in a better position. But trying to work something out with these crackers here, it ain't going to work. It ain't going to work because these people here, you know, something is wrong with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, as the brother said, Elliot said last time, they need to be put on a couch and get some psychological evaluation. And get shot up with some Thyrazine and Demerol or something, you know, because they're sick.
They
you
are.
Know, they are sick people. They you are. Know, these things they do, you know, everybody they come in contact with, they destroy. You know,
yeah.
They own, they destroy their own. They go to China, they have them people on drugs. They go to India, they have them people messed up. You see what they did to us and what they did to the red man. You know,
yes.
they you know, something is wrong with them people. So, yes. You know, I mean, I really hope they find another planet, brother, somewhere. I'll help them pack and say goodbye.
That's right.
Don't come back. You know, you take care, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Marcus. Always appreciate you listening. Appreciate you calling.
Thank you.
The Caucasian has been the evil on the planet. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They have been demonic on this planet. Everywhere they have gone, they have destroyed. They're about death, domination, or destruction. We have another caller, 646. Good afternoon, caller.
Hotep, brother Oshi, how are you, my brother?
Jay, I'm fine, dear brother. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, brother. You know it's always a pleasure to listen to your program, man. It's one of the best programs out here in regards to where we should be going culturally. So I'm always enjoying what you're saying in the direction that you're trying to lead us to. You know, today is Martin Luther King Day, and the phonies come out lock, stock, and barrel with their BS. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I
praise
do.
To the man who they absolutely hated and who they murdered. You know, my whole thing with Martin Luther King is from another perspective. I think he was a great man. I think he was a man who tried to lead us down the path that turned into our absolute destruction, in a sense, as a people. And, you know, I'm basically, in all honesty and truthfulness, sick of hearing about him. It's been 50 years since he's passed, and it just boggles my mind how we as a people, who are so immature in a sense, still hold him in such great reverence as a leader, and we haven't moved past what he stood for and what he did to evolve into a people that is developing more leaders and expanding upon what his message was. You know, I mean, that's a harsh reality. But as a people, we should not be in the position to where as we look at someone who has left us 50 years ago to still guide us into our so-called liberation, when he was here, he basically guided us into our total dismantle and destruction. If we really put into context what he stood for and what he did.
You know,
and that's
kind of tough, Jay, because, you know, he's held in such reverence and he believed that somehow our suffering and our could be redemptive and that people who have put us in that position would somehow look at us and then feel, have some kind of epiphany and think, oh man, I was really bad about what I did to these folks. Listen, Africans here in America and everywhere around the world, I'm really sorry for what I did. You know, and I want to make an amends. I want to begin to share this world with everybody. And be me. No, not at all.
Not
It's not.
They'll never behave like that on the planet since they came out of the mountains.
Exactly.
Since they came into existence with any form of people of color. There is no place in this world where people of color have been living amongst themselves in harmony, governing themselves, going about the business of their development as a people, and this Urugu has came into their comfort sphere
and destroyed,
not absolutely colonized them,
exactly,
and destroyed them,
and destroyed
as
them.
The people. There's no place on the planet. Yeah. No place.
That's why the analogy. No, that's why the analogy that Francis Crest talked about in the symbolism of the pool game, with the pool table being green, which would symbolize the earth, and the balls of color, which are the people of us of color, and the white ball having the privilege of being able to knock off, destroy, kill all the balls of color, with the last ball being the black ball, because it has the greatest potential for Caucasians to experience genetic annihilation. You see,
yeah,
and see,
but that's too deep. That's too deep for the Negro to understand. you get the average Negro to read that, and they think you crazy.
Yeah,
because they don't understand the context of the analysis or the behavior of the Urugu.
See,
now,
Jay.
Here it is.
See,
Jay. They don't even want to accept the fact. They don't even want to accept the fact that there is no place on this earth where people of color have been living in harmony amongst themselves, that the white man has come into their existence and not totally destroyed the people.
Yeah.
Rape, murder, just did everything that is non-human. So how could you call him a human when he has exhibited that type of behavior to a people ever since he's come within their midst? It's just like this whole thing of integrating with this character here in this country has done nothing but been disastrous for our people.
Well, Dr.
We are now at the point, like I said to you the other day, we can't even govern ourselves. We've been so brainwashed and manipulated to think that a vote is going to do something for us, but we don't even have the communities to benefit from a vote.
You
if
know,
you don't have a community to benefit from a vote, how is the vote helping you? Your vote is helping everybody else except for you, because there's no place for the person that you put in office to give back to you.
Well, see,
only individuals, in a sense, will benefit from it. And who are those individuals?
Well, it's just like
those
what
are the
Jay,
individuals at the top of the food chain.
Jay, it's just like what happened last month in Alabama. If it wasn't for the American African vote, Jones would not have defeated Moore. If only Caucasians in the state of Alabama would have voted, Roy Moore would have won. But the fact that they did that, and the first thing that Caucasian said, Jones, is that I may sometimes vote with Republicans, you know, or I may do this, that, and the other. And he hasn't put anybody, American African, into his cabinet or into his ministry.
Yes. You know, yes.
None of them.
Let me show you what he did. To shut up everybody's mouth. He did what they did back in the day when they started affirmative action. They hired a black to screen the candidates and most of those companies. And what did a Negro do when he had that position? Hired Urugu and others because he was fear of hiring blacks,
right,
that would make him look bad.
Right.
So when Doug Jones went out there and did was got him a Negro and made him the head of his staff. But my question then becomes, okay, you went out there and done that. How many other blacks were hired within your organization? What is the percentage of those that's in your senior staff, which is supposed to be 20? You see, now that falls on the Negro who he made the head of his staff. How many is he gonna hire that is black? And I would bet that it will be very, very few. The majority of his hires will be Urukus.
Of course.
But see, nobody will question that because of the simple fact
right.
that there's a Negro at the top.
Exactly.
So he did something that appeases you.
Exactly.
That makes you feel good. That makes you feel as though he did something for you. But in essence, he ain't do nothing for you or give you nothing in return for what you gave him. You put him in a position.
No, brother Jay.
This is what is happening to us constantly, but we don't understand it. So now here it is. You got this clown in office that's doing what he's supposed to do. That's something we don't understand. Donald, Hitler, whatever you want to call him, is doing what he's supposed to do.
Well, I'll say this: he's doing
what a lot of empire of whiteness.
Yes, that's right. Well, you know, one of the things that Dr. King said towards the end of his life. That's why I look more so at towards the end than it was in the 50s and into the early 60s about what was happening to him, because towards the end he began to realize all of the efforts to try to appeal to these Caucasians will fall on deaf ears because they have no intentions. They're not honorable. They have no integrity. In fact, hold on, Jay. Just hold that thought.
No, you got to always tell the people one thing. He was trying to get this Urugu to be one thing, moral.
Right.
They're immoral. Always got to put that in there.
Right. Which they're not. They're amoral. But what he told Harabella Fani says, I believe I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. Here's another analogy he could have used. I'm trying to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic. Basically, I'm saying, and he was saying at that moment, that this is really futile. There's nothing that I have done that any of us can do that are going to change and make this Caucasian respect our humanity and allow us to be a part of this system equitably, equally, righteously, fairly. It is not going to happen. See? It's not going to happen. And so what Dr. King was trying to do at that time, and then when he realized that, and he wanted to deal with those three evils of this society, racism, excessive materialism, and of course, militarism. He was finally saying to the society, all the money, and yet you see the total inequities, the deep disparities within the society of those who have and those who have not. And they're wider today. 50 years later, they're so damn wide that it would take 230 years before there's any kind of equity between what they have and what we would have in this society. It will never happen. And that's why...
That's why
these Caucasians say, no, they don't want to deal with redistribution of wealth. But that's what Dr. King was talking about in those last days of him before he was killed by this government, by this hypocritical government. And he was talking about the Poor People's Campaign. He was talking about the militarism of the Vietnam War and other machineries of the military industrial complex, which morphed into the prison industrial complex. That's what he was talking about. And that's when he truly became dangerous, and that's why he was murdered by the system. And you're right, Brother Jay. It's hypocrisy.
And it's all continuing to this day, but just with a different seasoning, as they would say in the pot. That's all. It's like we as a people want to be loved by this Urugu more than we want to love ourselves. we have this blatant desire to be a part of something that don't even want us to be a part of it unless they could benefit from our skill set and talent. We are nothing in honesty to the Urugu other than entertainment. I mean, think about it. When we were slaves, after the brutalization that we suffered from, what did they always have us do? Entertain us in whatever fashion that they deem necessary, from sex to whatever. And we fail to realize that this beast is not someone that we should be trying to even get along with. We should be trying to figure out how we can go home with Bow and develop our home and get that cracker out of our mix forever so that we could repent for the mistake of accepting that beast within us. When this Urugu first came into our eyesight, we should have known that he was a cockroach and squashed him. Well, but we didn't.
Well, no, because that's not our nature.
But it should have been. See, this is the thing where I sometimes disagree when we talk about our nature. Sometimes we have to have an inhumane nature when the enemy was coming within our midst. That's the biggest mistake we ever made, was allowing this individual to come within our midst.
Okay,
and not telling him.
Okay, so this is the deal, Jay. That is not our nature, and our nature is loving.
I understand that.
Let me finish. And because that's his nature, what has happened? Because what he has done to us is now we hate ourselves. We kill ourselves no other group. And yet we don't turn to the cracker who has done this to us, who has made us feel this way, who has put this into our hearts, into our minds of self-hatred and self-denial, that anything that why we can't come together and pull resources and trust one another, love one another, build with one another, but yet we still beg these crackers to please let me move into your neighborhood. Please hire me. Please let me go to your schools. Does it sound like what, Jay?
Do that sound like a sickness to you?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
it's a sickness of the mind.
The thing is, with a sickness, you try to have preventive measures to not get sick. Unfortunately, we didn't have the proper preventive measures to keep this sickness away from us. I mean, it's harsh, but the reality is, I wish at that point in time we didn't have our humanity that we've shown this world. I wish at that time when this cracker Urugu came in our midst, we didn't behave like that, because the world would be a much better place without the Urugu on it. I mean, did you see what happened on Saturday with that so-called false flag of that nuclear weaponry?
Yeah, in Hawaii. Yes,
in Hawaii.
I did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you see the panic of the people? Did you see how the people responded and reacted? I mean, think about that psychologically. That's what we suffered from.
Yes.
For
hundreds of years.
Urugu.
For hundreds of years.
You see what I'm saying? And on top of that, don't let it be fooled that was a false flag. That's just a test to see what the response is going to be.
Sure.
They're getting ready to do something. But the thing is, the North Korean has too much Urugu in him not to retaliate and punk out.
Let me say this.
Always remember that.
Right. Let me say this, Jay. Jay.
That Africans say.
Right. Because, see, you got to understand why the North Koreans are acting and behaving the way they are. Because of the Korean War, how they were consistently bombed by the United States, where those. And then that demilitarized zone was to divide North and South Korea. And North Korea said, never again. And so then they seen what happened in Iraq and what the United States did to Saddam Hussein and in Libya. They told Muammar Gaddafi not to develop these nuclear weapons. He said, okay, fine. And you see what happened to him. So North Korea is on point in terms of their mindset. Yes, and their mindset, you know. But we have a lot of work to do, man. We have a lot of work to do.
We come to do the work, Ochi. We come to do the work. You know why? Because it's too many of us figuring it out. It was like I was saying to Brother Elliot last night. We need to, those that are culturally awakening, need to figure out how we can come together and go to some sort of state and build and develop our thing. Because it has to take the elders now who are in a position like yourself that are retired to collectively come together, and we got to go someplace and build from there. Yeah. And then link up Homeward Bound and figure out how we could go back and forward to build up the necessary community as Africans, nationalists, Pan-Africans, to survive this madness that is coming afloat. You know, that's why I say, I hope you can get somebody, like I told Brother Elliot, from Jackson, Mississippi, on your show, to let us know how things are going with Brother Chokwe. Because Chokwe may have a situation in place to where as we as a people could help develop and grow that situation collectively, economically.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, Brother Oshi, we have to honestly separate ourselves and place ourselves in a position where collectively we can survive this beast. Because this thing is not going to get any better for our people. This thing is about to get worse. It's not getting better. I mean, just think about this in the behavior of the Yorugu. How it is you, on one day alone, fire 9,000 people without giving them notice from the richest corporation in the United States.
That just
Sam Club,
right?
The
that
Walton family. Do you understand right. that mind-bogglingness?
You know,
I mean, think about that, Brother Oshi.
Yeah, no,
they didn't even give them the notice. The notice that they wasn't gonna have no job. And here it is. You get up, you get dressed, and you go to work, and you see that. What did that do to you psychologically? As a person, to know that you are now at the point to where as you may not even be able to take care of your family.
Yeah.
What did that do to you? And it's like nothing. But they put forward this whole thing that this tax bill is going to do so much for you. But in the process, the greed of that Yorugu goes about and decimate over 9,000 people. And I'm wondering, out of that 9,000, how many of those people are Yorugus?
Well, at Walmart, it depends upon the location. But I know right here in Atlanta, they've closed a Sam's Club, and that community is up in arms. They're up in arms. See, on the one hand, because of that tax bill, corporations were given big benefits. And so the Walton family, Sam's Club, Walmart, gave a number of employees a bonus, $1,000.
No. But But no. Listen, Oshi, this is the lie. It was $1,000 based on your time or tenure with Walmart. And the only people that supposedly got that $1,000 was those that was there for 20 years, which was not that many. It broke down to, Brother Oshi, $150 for most of the workers, bro.
I'm laughing, but I'm not laughing.
I know what you're saying, but that was the thing. Nobody understood because nobody ever tells the whole story. It's always half of the story. It broke down to most of the workers, Brother Oshi, got $150. And on top of this, check this out, what they did. They fired co-managers, I think it was, and then hired assistant managers to do the job and told the co-managers that they could apply for the assistant manager's job.
Yeah.
They cut deep on his brother. They kind of, and now it is being put forward that Walmart did something so good for their employees by giving them $1,000 with all actuality. The majority only got $150. Now, what is $150 going to do for you?
Well,
but this is what they do to us, Oshi.
Yeah.
This is the game that they play on us, and we don't even realize it. Now, the question becomes, like you said, in Atlanta, where you at, they closed down those Sam Clubs. What are the people going to do about it, Oshi?
Yeah.
That's the dilemma that we face. What are the people going to do about it? Are they going to come together collectively and do something and make Walmart pay? The sad tragedy of it is that we as black people have nothing in place to bring the people to us. There's not even a black national grocery store, I don't think.
No, it isn't.
In this country. There are black grocery stores.
Oh, yeah.
But
not here in Atlanta.
Chain.
Hey, Jay, not here in Atlanta.
No, I know this. Now, I know you're a part of, I think it's that you, Umoja Group that is opening up a coffee shop in Atlanta soon?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, Brother Oshi, I think that once y'all get that coffee shop open and y'all look to do your next product, y'all need to really, really seriously investigate opening up some sort of grocery store chain in the nature of something like a Trader Joe's.
Right, health foods.
Or RB's.
Yep.
That's something that y'all need to look at. To be in a position to compete against Walmart, which in all honesty, I can tell you this, Walmart is not the store that it's supposedly cracked up to be. If I'm going to do any type of food shopping, I would rather go to a Trader Joe's or Aldi's before I would go to a Walmart. But see, we just think because like a Target and all of these other places that we've been inundated with that they're that good, that they serve so much of a purpose for our so-called benefit. But those places do nothing but use you. And then in the process, they do what they did last week. I mean, that right there, what they did to our people, if we supposedly united and we care so much about our brothers and sisters, we should make the commitment as black people could never go in and purchase from Walmart again. Do you know if we collectively made that statement, Brother O.C., the behavior of Walmart would totally change? But we won't do that. It's just like the boycott in Memphis with the buses. You know, if we would have stuck to never going back to the buses, we would be in a better position. We would have better leverage. But hey, you know, it is what it is. But listen, brother, as always,
all right. Thanks,
we
Jay.
Get with you. It's an honor, Brother O.C., and it's also an education because you give forward so much and you understand our position so clearly, and you're not trying to integrate and put forward a narrative that everything is kumbaya, brother.
Appreciate it.
The greatness of you, O.C. You always tell the truth from what perspective? An African perspective.
Sure, you're right.
You're not trying to integrate with this beast and make excuses for his genocide against us as a people, this continuous genocide against us. You're always trying to move us forward in African thought and idea. And I have much love and respect for you, Brother O.C., because of that. Because I just wish we would have more people who do what you do, take that same perspective, and then maybe we would have the opportunity to educate our people to realize that this Urugu is our perpetual enemy. Hotel.
Brother Jay, thank you, my friend. Thank you and bless you, and continue to listen and continue to contribute. Always good to hear from you, Brother Jay. Thank you. On this day when we're honoring Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and what he stood for and what he was trying to do, particularly in the latter parts. Because see, I'm going to just keep it real. When I was coming up in my teenage years when Dr. King was living, I didn't gravitate, although I was a part of the NAACP Youth Council. And there was a Caucasian pastor, actually he was a priest, Father James Groppi. And Father James Groppi led the demonstrations, the open housing marches, the other marches in the city against brutality and so forth. And in fact, some people argue that, you know, y'all got a white man, y'all got a Caucasian or a cracker leading y'all. You know, I have to admit that the man was a decent man. Had a chance to talk with him later years, like before he quit the priesthood and became a bus driver and then passed on. And I remember talked to his widow. You know, but the bottom line is that good Caucasians of conscience is so few and far between. And also, many of them don't want to change the power dynamic that has been established by European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. I used to say supremacy, but Brother Paul out of the UK, he said, I don't want to call them supreme. And I know a number of our people don't want to say that the Caucasian is superior, and I got that. I got that because they're not. They're not. But what they are is extreme in terms of how they impose their culture, because that's what it is. There's no such thing as race. There's only one race, the human race, of which African people are the fathers and mothers of. Only one. It's cultures. The European, when he went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of, he imposed his culture on people. He said, whatever your traditions, whatever your religion, whatever your customs are, they're inferior. And we're going to destroy. If you don't accept us and what we're bringing, if you don't accept Christianity in this white face, if you don't accept our traditions, our mode of law, and ideology and methodology and everything else, then we're going to kill you. We're going to eliminate you. This will be for real genocide. And it's happened. In fact, even the only group of people on this planet who have exercised and implemented a genocide against another group of people. The only ones. And yet somehow, some way we can believe and particularly believe that the religion that they have imposed upon us can help us get that, can help us bring that about. Dr. King said, this was my favorite quote of Dr. King. Nothing in the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. I'll repeat. Nothing in the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. Sincere. When you write a letter and you're passionate about your point of view, or you're passionate about who you're sending the letter to, you sign at the bottom, sincerely, sincere. That means that it's heartfelt. That it means that you really mean it. So to be sincere to ignorance, I understand ignorance is not bad in itself, because ignorance is simply absence of knowledge. You know, and just like I was saying one time, I was in a conversation with a brother. I said, you know, I'm ignorant of quantum physics. And it just so happened the brother said, well, I know quantum physics. Well, I said, well, you can teach me quantum physics. That would end my ignorance. The point being is ignorance in itself is not bad. It's just absence of knowledge. And what this program tries to do every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. is to help eliminate that ignorance of us, who we are historically, who we are consciously, who we are as a people. Because we're ignorant of these facts. Ignorance. But sincere to being ignorant? That's a dedication to being ignorant. Then he further says, conscientious stupidity. To be conscious means you're being aware. To being aware that you're stupid? That you don't really want to know? You don't care to know? Another quote I often say is that if we knew better, we do better. The reality is, a lot of us don't want to know. Because if we know, our attitude and behavior has to change, because we're now more aware. So if we knew better, we do better. But a lot of us know better and refuse to change. In fact, we ignore that. We just like the Caucasian does, who suffers from cognitive dissonance. What that means is that the attitude of the Caucasian, who have a belief that they are superior. That's why Trump acts the way he does. Because not just him, but people of not just of his ilk, but Caucasian people, period. Period. Globally, they think that they have a right, that they are privileged. They are less than 10% of the human population, but they control damn near 90% or 80% of the wealth on the planet. They're just 10%. And they got all the other people at each other's throat. They've imposed the idea of being Caucasian is the model, is the image that everyone should aspire to, should want to be like, the hair, the nose, the eye shape is the model. And everybody has done it because they bought into it. The idea of Caucasianness. European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege dominates the planet. If you want to join this conversation, please do. 215 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. So as we celebrate Dr. King, his legacy, his history, to me, you got to celebrate it or look at it from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. Because when you do that, you take away all of the mysticism, and then also to you, you look at his life in totality. You look at Michael King. What was his middle name? Michael something King. His name was Michael King. His father changed his name and Dr. King's name to the German reformer, Martin Luther. The German reformer. And, I mean, there's a lot of things about King that people, you know, that are just starting to realize or come to understand or look at, you know. You know, read a piece the other day about Dr. King prior to when he was in Boston. Supposedly had a thing for a Caucasian woman, German woman at that. And, of course, he knew that his father, and who's grooming him to take over the ministry, that probably wouldn't have washed, particularly down here in Atlanta at that time in the 1960s, you know. Also, too, as a young man, supposedly he felt real bad about his grandmother's death, that he wanted to try to commit suicide, supposedly. So there's a lot of things about him as a man, as a human being. I know there's some, in fact, one of my cousins many years ago, back in the 80s, said Dr. King was a prophet. He should be deified. I mean, yeah, he was a man like everybody else. I think the thing is about Dr. King is, aside from his outstanding oratory skills, you know, I mean, he was a great speaker, no doubt about it. But to me, great speeches are like everything else in terms of symbolism. I'm down with substance. I don't give a damn if a person can make a great speech or not, but can that person bring people together? Can that person help move our people forward? That's what's the bottom. I mean, somebody can say, well, they can hear the speech and they can be motivated to do it. No, I understand that too. Because people love to hear good speeches. In fact, I was told that, you know, they wanted this other guy to speak and they didn't want me to speak because I may not be well received, you know, because I'm going to come hard. I'm going to come very hard. And in this day and age, at this juncture of our struggle for liberation, self-determination, and sovereignty for ourselves as a people, it is the only way to, because to me, if you don't come that way, then don't come at all. Stay your butt at home. Keep it to yourself. We're in a very tenuous position. Our future is not promised. It's not, you know, it's not certain. It is only when we make it so. And the fact that we continue to look at things from an American, European, Caucasian ideology is disastrous for us. That's why I keep saying all the time, we need to step outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us to look at our situation for what it is. We need to release the vice grip that these crackers have on our minds. Dr. King was right. He was trying to integrate us into a burning building. He truly did not truly understand the depths of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, and what it will do, how far it will go to maintain and sustain the privilege that has been created. And when he finally really wanted to challenge the three evils of this society of racism, excessive materialism, capitalism, and militarism, they killed him. They set him up and they killed him. And the members within his organization, some argue Jesse knew, Jesse Jackson knew. Some have argued that. I don't know whether or not he knew it or not. Only thing I do know is that this government, which is today having all these proclamations and all these little programs, hated him, vilified him, demonized him, couldn't stand him, and then ultimately killed him. And now they hail him in such high praise. The hypocrisy of this country sickens me. It just sickens me. We only have about 5 minutes left. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Remember the programs that are on our list, and we have this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Tonight, I believe, Buy Black 365 will air tonight, I believe. And, of course, on Wednesday, Revive, which is the PLC, from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Excuse me, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Us Lifting Us on Thursdays. The Economic Development Cooperative for Our People at 9 p.m. on Thursdays. And remember, we're developing the Cafe Ulu. And what Jay said, it was what I was thinking. And I've been thinking that for the last year or so. We talked about developing this cafe. And I said, the thing we need to do is have a store of fresh produce. Get to form an alliance with the American African farmers. But anyway. And on Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturdays, sports talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Once again, we're definitely trying to get Dr. Rogers up and running with Black Reality Think Tank on 4 p.m. on Saturdays. And then on Sundays, Revive, again with Sister PLC from 10 a.m. to, excuse me, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sundays. And then on Sunday evening, 7 p.m. time for an awakening. And other programs, remember I talked about Brother Paul from the U.K., a program coming out of the U.K. Looking forward to that. Also, too, consistently promoting other programs. My good friend, Brother Joseph Muhammad, who was on the program the other day, and his program is Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness every Friday from 4 to 6. And the number to call to listen is 563-999-3089. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness with your host, Brother Joseph Muhammad, from 4 to 6 Eastern Time, 563-999-3089. I'll be announcing that, as well as Africa for the Africans at home and abroad, Africa for the Africans tour. And I know that Brother Elliot had a good brother on last night talking about the same thing, repatriation and in Ghana, investment tours and so forth. You know, Sumbri, I believe the brother's name was, and outstanding program last night as always. But I had on my program a couple of Mondays ago, Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tahimbe. Brother Humani Tayembe, you can go Facebook.com/Bomani and look at some of the photos, or you can go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007 and look up some of the videos of some of the tours that were made. He has taken hundreds of our brothers and sisters, and I'm quite sure the other brother has too, and that's what we need, because not only am I talking about this, I push and promote it. Brothers and sisters, the best way to fight an alien and oppressive culture is to embrace your own. No, we can't fight these folks militarily. It's crazy, it's suicidal. Because one thing I know about the cracker, he's always invented a better way to kill. A better way to kill. Look at the history. But the best way to fight them in an alien oppressive culture is to embrace our own, to reestablish our own. Brothers and sisters, In the words of Stephen Biko, we end this program like we all are, every program. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Just not the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Have a blessed day. See you on Wednesday. Peace.